We're discussing the fourth chapter now. The verses. We complete the first section. So the fourth chapter has these five sections. So we discussed about how Krishna comes and teaches Dharma, as taught in the Swami, and then he also comes and establishes Dharma. So in one sense, these two roles are parallel. Krishna teaches kings so that he can again establish Dharma. But when the knowledge is lost, which can also mean that the kings are not effective enough, then the Dharma is, knowledge is not available, knowledge is implemented properly. So that's why Adharma comes up. Then Krishna comes and restores the knowledge and he establishes Dharma both. So let's go to verse 11. This is the most popular verse of both Vaishnavas and Mayavadis. But the first part is popular for Vaishnavas, second part for Mayavadis. So did that verse?
ये यथा मां प्रपद्यन्ते तथैव भजाम्यहम् मम वर्तमानुवर्तन्ते मनुष्यः पार्थ सर्वशः.
So in the previous verse, Krishna described that there are certain people who come back to him if they become free from Vita Raga Bhaya. Now, if, what about the other people? Are they all abandoned by Krishna or are they still there with Krishna? So, Krishna takes care of them also, but for the people earlier, it was like a pure devotional service. Man Maya Mama Bhashita. They surrender to him fully. But others who cannot surrender to him fully, then as they surrender to him, Krishna rewards them accordingly. That's the meaning of ye yathama prapadyante. So, God does not discriminate, but he reciprocates. There is a difference between discriminate and reciprocate. Many times people think that God should be equal to all. Yes, God is indeed equal to all. But equality does not mean stone-like neutrality. Equality means reciprocity. If a person is equal to all, now what does that mean? If somebody is his enemy, he is just the same, unsmiling, grave self to him, and somebody tries to be very friendly and loving to him, the same unsmiling, grave self. No difference between the way he deals with friends and enemies. We may say it is laudable, but then the stone also does not have any difference in the way it deals with friends and enemies. So, when we talk about personality, a person is adorned by his emotions. So when we say Krishna is equal, equality does not mean neutrality. Equality means equal reciprocity. He is equally approachable for everyone. And he reciprocates with everyone. So, is it that Krishna is partial to his devotees? Yes, but that partiality is a part of his equality. Because he gives everyone equal opportunity to become his devotees. And those who become his devotees, he naturally loves them. Why? He loves them more. Why? Because they love him more. It's a part of natural human reciprocation. Natural, understand human reciprocation, natural personal reciprocation. Otherwise, if God was not reciprocal, then there would be no possibility of developing a personal relationship with him. Just like you cannot develop a relationship with a stone, because the stone is neutral to everyone. It doesn't respond to anything that anyone does to him. If we expect that God and his equality should be neutral entirely, then there will be no personality or personal sentience or emotions left to God. So that's why at the seventh canto, which we are, and how many of us are reading because of the Narasimha Chaturdashi, So the first chapter of the seventh canto is Supreme Lord is equal to all. And that's what is being asked over there. That he kills the demons, and he protects the devotees. Is that his partiality? No. This verse describes the principle by which God deals with different people. As all people surrender, I reward accordingly. So, Chakravarti Pal explains that what is this Yathama Prapadyante? He says the materialistic people who think my janma and karma, that is the janma karma change, so those who know me tatvataha, what happens? They madbhava madhataha. That was described in previous words. But those who think my birth and activities, my janma and karma, to be temporary, Krishna says, I make their janma and karma temporary.
That is materialistic people?
Yes, so it is another astrology character. My janma, those who think my janma karma temporary, I make their janma karma temporary. The Mayavadi, those who think my janma and karma to be illusion, I make their janma karma to be illusion. Those who devotees who take understand my janma karma to be eternal, I make their janma and karma eternal. So this is the God reciprocity. And tam tathaiva, tatha iva, tatha, in that same way, I'll reciprocate it. Vajamya. Now, in the discussions between Ramanandaraya and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, actually, Lord Krishna is quoted by Ramanandaraya, and it says that Krishna says, Krishna promises in the Gita that as he is surrendered to me, I will reciprocate accordingly. But he says, with the gopis, we cannot keep this promise. Why? Because gopis surrender so utterly to him that Krishna has nothing to reciprocate them. Therefore, he says, na paarayeho. I cannot repay. I cannot repay. Krishna is so indebted, so thoroughly indebted. So, as all people surrender to me, I reward accordingly. So, this principle applies at different levels. To all living beings, it applies that as they approach Krishna, Krishna manifests himself accordingly to them, reciprocates accordingly to them. Now, even for devotees, this principle applies. In the Bhagavatam, there is a well-known verse, yadyat diya purugaya bhavayanti. That whatever form the devotee desires to worship the Lord manifests that form and accepts the worship. So, Gopal Bhatta Goswami was worshipping Shaladra. And he felt that, oh, I'm not able to do deity worship, I'm not able to dress, decorate Shaladra. And this happened on Asajitu Dashari. He was praying the previous night. And the next morning when he woke up, he was in Shaladra in a small basket. And he found that the basket's lid was tilted. And he was surprised that maybe that night some snake or something went inside. He took a long stick and started pushing the basket down. You see the snake was there. But the lid did not go down only. And when he moved it, there was no snake coming out or no snake shaking. And he picked up the lid and he saw some deities of Radha Raman there. So, he is Hamam. So, devotee desires to worship the Lord in a personal way. The Lord reciprocates by manifesting a personal form. So, now, this is one principle. God reciprocates according to how one approaches him. But, the next part is Mama Vartamanu Vartante Manushya Partha Sagoshaha. So, this part is loved by the impersonalists. The impersonalists are trying to say that all people, Krishna's translation, this verse literally translates as all people are on my path. The impersonalist is translated as all paths lead to me. Now, we can look at it from a grammatical point of view. Actually, this point of all paths lead to the same goal, it can be refuted in three ways: grammatically, logically, and scripturally. So, grammatically, if you see the word sarvashaha, sarvashaha is the adjective, all. Where does this come to closest? They hear mama vartama anuvartante. Anuvartante is to follow. Vartama is parts. Manushyaha is people. So, sarvashaha comes closer to manushyaha than to vartama. Therefore, the sarvasha, logically, from the point of grammar, will apply to manusha. So, all people are following my path. But if now, if you try to make a sarvashaha, vartma, all paths are being followed by people, all paths, and if you apply it to vartma, you know, it doesn't literally lead to transition, all paths lead to me. Because sarvashaha is very far away. And even if we argue from a pure logical point of view, we know that all paths. See, if everything leads to God, then a thief can say that when I'm killing, I'm coming back to God. Because that's my duty. A butcher can say, you know, that's my profession. Killing cows. All paths lead to the same goal. Doesn't make any sense. Now, of course, no serious intellectual Mayavadi actually says that all paths lead to the same goal in that sense. They also, what they mean is that different religions all lead to the same goal. Now, in that sense, we agree with that. But the tendency in this material world is, in order to sound more appealing, they try to make the appeal of themselves very broad-minded. So what happened? The Christians came and they said that, our way is the only way. So when the impersonalists, they went abroad and they were preaching, they said, we are not narrow-minded in the Christians. You say your way is the only way, we say that all ways are the same way only. Your way, our way, all ways are the same way. That is fine. In one sense, yes, all bona fide ways that come from God and are taught by the messengers of God, they are correct. But the same thing when it is trivialized for the sake of popular appeal, then it gets completely distorted. And we say that Prabhupada has asked this question. Probably Prabhupada replied, I have heard Swamiji, Prabhupada has asked that. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that whatever we do, we will come back to him. Yes, what did Prabhupada reply? Yeah, why does Krishna have to speak Bhagavad Gita? Because whatever you do, you are going to come to him. And anyway, you do whatever you want to do. Why does Krishna have to speak Bhagavad Gita? It is chaotic argument, actually speaking. And it is clearly Krishna talks over different parts. Yantileva Vrata Deva, Itrani Yanti Pitravata. So, now what does this mean? It means, we have to understand this verse in the context of 10.41. What is 10.41? Yadyad vibhutimattattva śrīmadurjitam evava tattat evavagattattattvam mamatejo viśatam bhava. And all opulent, beautiful, glorious creations spring from but a spark of my splendor. That means that whatever anyone is attracted to, that is a manifestation of Krishna. It may be a partial manifestation of Krishna, it may be a fractional manifestation of Krishna, it may be an infinitesimal manifestation of Krishna. But whatever anyone is attracted to is manifestation of Krishna. So what they are being attracted to is in that sense Krishna. In that sense they are following Krishna's path. But there are certain manifestations of Krishna which take us towards Krishna and there are certain manifestations which take us away from Krishna. So there may be an intellectually brilliant atheist and even his intelligence is coming from Krishna. But that intelligence is taking people away from Krishna. The female beauty is also coming from Krishna. But that beauty generally will take people away from Krishna. That's why in the Vibhuti Yoga, there is Daivi Vibhuti and there is Asuri Vibhuti. Daivi Vibhuti is that which takes us towards Krishna. Asuri is that which takes us away from Krishna. So all people are on one path that ultimately leads to Krishna. But some people are going towards Krishna and many are going away from Krishna. So in that sense, Krishna consciousness is all encompassing. See, every religion claims, Islam will claim that we are the universal religion. Christianity will claim we are the universal religion. Krishna says, you know, sarva yonishu kamtaya murtaya sambhavam. All living beings are my children. So everybody can lay a claim to universality from a literalistic point of view. Everybody will say that, yes, our religion is the best religion, our religion is the only religion, our religion is the universal religion. But the Bhagavad Gita speciality is, the Bhagavad Gita does not just make a regional or geographical or social or cultural claim. It first of all destroys our material sense of identity. You know, when Muslims or Christians say that, you know, our religion is the greatest religion, our religion is the universal religion, first of all they have the bodily conception of life. I'm Muslim and the path with the religion which I am following is universal. But Krishna consciousness destroys the body conception of life. we are not the body, we are the soul. And, you know, the basic beliefs of other religions, if we compare Christianity or Islam, okay, that Jesus is the only, Jesus was the light, or Muhammad is the last prophet, or whatever we want to talk. These are specific beliefs which have an origin in history. At this particular time, this teacher came and they taught him at a particular time, which is fine, but if you look at what the Bhagavad Gita teaches, it is universal principles. This is not something which applies only to Hindus or Muslims or Christians. It applies to everyone. With the philosophical analysis by which Krishna explains how fear not the body and the soul, this applies to everyone. So, when Prabhupada starts teaching, this is the difference between the Semitic religion. Semitic religions means Christianity, Islam and Judaism. They begin with a demand on faith. You know, this person is a prophet and his teachings are the words of God. Believe it. So they give dogma and demand faith. But the Vedic scriptures start by telling, inquire. Athanto brahma jikyasa. Faith is certainly required, but faith comes later. Begin with inquiry. Now we say adav shraddha. But what is the shraddha? Prabhupada translates the shraddha. It is that divinity and divine service. Tashraddhana munayo. Jnana vairagya yuktaya. That Prabhupada shraddhana. The shraddha Prabhupada translates as very interesting. Serious inquisitiveness. Now normal Sanskrit grammarian will get a heart attack when the shraddha translated as inquisitiveness. Serious inquisitiveness. But what does that mean? That means that basically that there could be something in the spiritual realm. At least have that much basic faith and inquire. So, Tashvadhana Munayo, Jnana Vairabhaitya. Prabhupada, the seriously inquisitive student. Shraddhana Prabhupada translates as seriously inquisitive. So, the Vedic scriptures don't begin by demanding faith. They actually call us, all they demand is inquire. Because inquire, is there something beyond it? Is something very different? If you look at it seriously, you know, if you look at the Christian or the Islamic concept of paradise also, what do they do in paradise? Basically, they have a very comfortable arrangement for eating, sleeping and all those things. But they may not talk about, in Christianity, they don't talk about mating so much. In Islam, their attraction for going to jihad is to mate. Now, all the jihadis are promised that every one of you will have 73 virgins to enjoy it. Every one of you. So, you know, with all due respect, you know, there is silent discussion of what Allah does in paradise. It is only what you will do in paradise after you go there. So, you know, and the idea is also that you will probably go back in your own body. And that's why they preserve the body also. So, they think that so the bodily conception itself is not destroyed. And that's why the religion becomes incorporated in the false ego of the person. The religion becomes incorporated in the false ego. And our false ego is that, you know, I am Indian. I am Brahmin, I am this, I am that. So, what happens if the worldly conception is not destroyed? The religion becomes a part of the policy. In fact, many times the religion, for especially these exclusivist religions is, so you say we are the only way. The religion becomes the foundational policy. Yes, I am a Christian. But I just reinforce the worldly conception, unfortunately. And to the extent they follow some regulatory principles, that is good. To the extent they have some faith in God, that is good. But still the point remains that these religions don't have much philosophy. All that they have is a certain moral and ethical codes to be followed. And they will elevate their followers a bit, but not all that much. So this is a fundamental difference. Now we talk about faith also. Krishna consciousness also requires faith, no doubt about it. But Krishna consciousness does not begin by demanding faith. If you see Prabhupada's preaching was first of all logical. Actually, according to this thing about logic. Think about this. Is there something beyond eating, sleeping, making, defending?
Prabhupada later on introduces Bhagavad Gita as the word of God.
Surely he does that. But that's not how he starts. He starts by inquiry into the long-term goal of life. What happens? What is your ultimate? Who are you ultimately? What is your ultimate destination after death?
What are the first sentence you said? Majority vote now. We can become yoga barista and we can come back again to the topic afterwards. But we'll slow down a little bit. Or we can keep this for the end. Whichever way you prefer. Right? It's an important topic and we'll try our best to finish this. So we should devote at least 1 hour for discussing this systematically. And we'll try to do this at the end. Because you know, I have got some letters which Prabhupada says to Sadhguru Maharaj. We can even discuss that particular pastime of Chamkas. Generally, we discuss only the sensational, dramatic part. But philosophical discussions with there in Chamkas and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is also very insightful. So, once we complete this, we will surely discuss it.
Somebody can
move on. Yeah. Of course, this is something which I will not forget. But it's nice if somebody can note it. Yeah, either you can only load it up. No, but you have a computer. You can just make a Word file or doc file. Okay. So, anyway, while we're talking about this, that we're talking about the universality of Krishna consciousness. The universality is not at a bodily level. First of all, our own bodily conception and our own false ego is destroyed by Krishna consciousness. Hopefully, it should be destroyed. And but at least conceptually we understand that. Our claim is not another sectarian claim. First of all, understand it is not our claim. It is based on the universal teaching of the scriptures that we move forward. Now, after this, Krishna asks naturally now. Arjuna gets this question, okay, so first Krishna says that those who know me will come back to me. Then he tells, how can people come back to me if they are free from raga bhaya krodha? Now, for what about others? For those other people, Krishna gives this principle. That they are all on my path, but depending on how they surrender, they will come to me. Then Krishna talks about how other people surrender to somebody else, that is the devatas. They don't surrender to me, they surrender to devatas. And this verse is the first mention of demigod worship in the Bhagavad Gita. And this will be elaborated more in the 7th chapter. Krishna talks about demigod worship in 7th and 9th chapters. And we will discuss demigod worship a little more in detail over there. But let's recite this verse. Kaushanta karmanam siddhim yajanta iha devataha shipram imanushe loke siddhir bhavati karmaja. Translation? One by one, you can start from behind. So, Kshipram Himanushelo. Kshipra is quickly. Where did the word Kshipram come again? Kshipram. Kshipram Bhavati Dharma. Quickly. So, he says that by the demigod worship, relatively quickly, because demigod, you do this ritual and it's more like a mechanism. It's not personal reciprocation. Just like if we go to a shop and place the money, the shopkeeper will give us the goods. So, like that. Krishna and the devata, when you worship them, do the process, they will do the results. Siddhir bhavati karmacha. So now we're talking about demigod worship. Then Krishna says, isn't that I am differentiating? Some people are becoming your devotees, some people are becoming demigods worshippers. And you know, there are people who are Vaishya, Shudras. Who does all this? And Krishna gives a very important verse. Now we quote only one line of the verse very often. Let's look at the full verse and try to understand its import. Translation.
According to the three modes of material nature and the work associated with them, the four divisions of human society are created by me. Although I am the creator of this system, you should know I am yet the non-dual in the universe.
So, guna karma vibhagashah. Now, the prevalent Indian notion is that the varna is determined by birth. Now, birth is also a factor, but it is not the only factor. If you see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was what historians call a reformed, but he did not reject the caste system. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he was present, when he was staying in Varanasi, he stayed at the house of, Chandrasekharacharya. And who loves you to Pushadam? Tapan Mishra. Why? Because Chandrasekharacharya was not a Brahmana. So, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did not in one sense reject the caste system. Although he did not appreciate it, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had sufficient influence, but he did not force Haridas Thakur to be allowed entry, or Sanatana Goswami or Goswami to be allowed entry into the matter. Because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he showed deference to authority, deference to the local Hindu sentiments. This is your sentiment? He did not disturb that. Nabuddhvedam janaye abhyanam karma sangina. That was the principle of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, you see, the caste system had become so deeply entrenched that when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to Vrindavan, the son of your Brahman is a Brahman. But even that Brahmana said, you know, because I am a low jati Brahman. So there is caste, there is varna and there is jati. Jati is like a sub-category within the caste. This is because I am a Brahmana of a low jati, so I cannot offer you food. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, if mother is a 2 years ago, then surely I'll take. So then, that means, you know, what to speak of taking outside a Brahmana person, or outside a Brahmana. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you know, there was the caste system was such that a sannyasi was expected to not take food even in the house of a low-grade Brahmana, or to speak of somebody as a non-Brahmana. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did not, in that sense, go against the caste system. Why? Because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to engage everyone in devotional service. He did not disturb their minds needlessly. Bhaktisiddhanta Sri Thakur also, you know, he initiated non-Brahmana families as Brahmanas. But in Mayapur, whenever he would build temples, he would have only people born in Brahmana families to be teached. Chaitanya Prabhupada, he allowed Mataji also to read worship in the West. But in India, it was only those who do deity worship. Why? Deference to local opinion. Why deference to local opinion? Because ultimately, the people who are there around us, we have to preach to them only. And where it is necessary for us to confront, we will confront them. But where it is not necessary, there is no need to confront them. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to encourage everyone to chant Hare Krishna. And in that sense, makes such an advancement. So, that's why the point here which we are discussing is that birth was originally not unimportant. But the problem is when birth is made all important. There are two ways. Because if you consider something to be entirely unimportant, the second is to consider something to be all important. Yeah, Adiyana. So now, if you see the idea is that if somebody is born in a doctor's family, so his childhood he gets the culture of a doctor. He sees his parents treating. And he hears them talking, he sees the instruments, it's easier for him to become a doctor. So in that sense, birth is a useful qualification. But birth is not the only qualification. That's the mistake. Now Krishna is telling, these varnas are created by me. That means, actually these four are personality types. These four are personality types. Or we can say human types, which are going to be there everywhere. You know, whether we go to, like when Prabhupada went to America and he said, I have come searching for Brahmanas. Somebody said, there's nobody, no Brahmana in America. No, people have Brahmanical intelligence. Now if you see,
among this guna and karma. To some extent, our society gives training for the karma. Isn't it? Some training is there. If somebody wants to become a writer, somebody wants to become an intellectual, somebody wants to become a research scholar, you go to university, the professors, you do a PhD, get a particular kind of training. So the karma training is there. Somebody wants to become a businessman. Yes, he can do some business management, he can do some school, go to some business management school, and maybe to get training under some other businessman and start a business. So the speciality of the Vedic culture is not to train people in the karma. Karma in one sense is a competence. And guna is the character. So what is especially required in training in character? So even now we have politicians. But the politicians are expert not in protecting people, but in exploiting people. Isn't it? India is the wealthiest country in the world. I think most of you know it, isn't it? India is the wealthiest country in the world, according to Swiss Bank statistics.
You know, according to Swiss Bank,
India, you know, India has more money in Swiss Bank than any other country in the world. You know, not just any other country in the world, India has more money in the Swiss Bank than all other countries combined together.
So, so much money is there.
So, what is happening is, we have political leaders, but they are all super corrupt. They are doing the karma, but they don't have the guna. So Varanashram offered training in both guna and karma. So in that sense, you know, these are four human types. There are some people who will become, now if somebody has become a politician, political leader, he has to have some competence. He has to be able to speak in some way which influences people, and he attracts people by that. And for whatever little faith they develop in him, so he has to have the charisma. So that material part of the quality, or the competence part, will come. That will be given by karma. That can also be developed by training. But more important is the character part. And Krishna here is talking about Varanashram for the fact that he is the creator of Varanashram. But interestingly, he creates, but he is not. He is saying, I am not the doer. Tasya kartaram abhimanam iti akartaram. Now why does he say I am akartaram? In the sense that it's like the teacher creates the exam question paper. And after the teacher sets the exam question paper, some students come first class, some students come second class, some come third class, some come fifth class. Now can you say the teacher is responsible for that? No, that is the student's responsible. So like that, Krishna has created the four varanas. But in which varana a soul is placed, that Krishna has not determined. That the soul is determined by his own karma. That's why I say, akartaram. So I am the maker of the system, but I am not the person who determines who forcibly places people in that system. People get placed in the system by their own karma. That's why, akartaram. And avyayam. I am not affected. I am not perishable. A second time Krishna will state this, that if one understands his nature, one will get liberated. When did he say this first? 4.9. This 5 verses immediately after that. Let us recite this.
Namam karmani limpanti name karma phale spruha iti mam yodhi janati karma bhirna sabadhyate.
Namam karmani limpanti. When I work, it is not to get some result. And I am not attached. So there are two things. Like you remember what we discussed earlier? The attachment is the glue between the karta and the karma phala. So that glue is not there. Why? Because Krishna does not desire a result, any result particularly. And Krishna does not get bound. So in one sense, the first is the assertion and the second is the explanation. I am not bound by karma. Why? Because I am not attached to the fruit of the work. And one who understands this, karma bhi nasabhatyate. Nasabhatyate. Such a person will also not be bound. So, you know, there is this verse which Prabhupada often quotes in the Shruti, natasya karyam karanam cha vidyate. And that absolute truth does not have anything to do.
Now, when he says that he does not have anything to do, does that mean that he does not do anything?
No.
What it means is that he is not obliged to do anything. Like Krishna says, name parthasti kartavyam. There is nothing that I am obligated to do. So God does many things. You know, again, the Western idea of God, the Christian idea of God is what? Is like a frozen perfection. What do you mean by frozen perfection? It's like some artist is making a painting. So when an artist is making a painting, as the painting is nearing its completion, it reaches a climax, a peak. And now you put one dab over it, one line over here, now the painting is the most beautiful. And after that, if we add any more dashes, any more lines, then the beauty will decrease. So, that means, in the drawing of the painting, or in the coloring of the painting, at one stage it attains perfection. Before that, or after that, it is not perfect. So that is their idea of God. God is a frozen perfection. That God is perfect, but if he does any activity, then what will happen? Yeah, his perfection will be lost. Why? Why will his perfection be lost? Because why does he have to do any activity? Either earlier he was not perfect, and now he wants to become perfect so he does some activity. Or, he was perfect, but he felt the need to do something, which means again he was not perfect. So, the idea of God is like a frozen perfection. But this is a very simplistic idea of God. Yes, God is eternally perfect. But the very future explained that perfection is not a frozen perfection, it is a dynamic perfection. What do we mean by dynamic perfection? So, Ramanacharya and Baldev Vidyabhushan both explain this. Ramanacharya says that, why does God do any activity? No. It is God does activity as a leela. Tal leelaya, the Bhagavatam says. As a play. Just like when a person starts playing a game, he is not obligated by any duty to play the game. He is doing this spontaneously. So, I say, therefore, he says, God's leela does not contradict natasya karyam karmam chayate. Because he is not doing it out of duty, he is doing it out of play. Now, Baldev Vidyabhushan takes this further and he says, actually, even when he plays, now playing is also for some objective. What is that? Pleasure. We play so that we get some pleasure. But he says, when God does the activity, he is himself fully satisfied. So it is not that he does his leela to get pleasure. Just like a person when he plays to get pleasure. Rather, Krishna is fully happy and his activities are a result of his natural overflowing happiness. And he used the example of dancing. He says when a person is happy, he dances. It is not that to become happy he dances. The dancing is a natural expression of his overflowing happiness. So like that, Krishna is overflowingly happy and his activities are just an expression of his overflowing happiness. That's why, and Krishna does lila. Naname karma phale suha. If you know, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu meets Raghupati Upadhyaya at the house of Pallab Bhatta in Varanasi, at that time Raghupati Upadhyaya quotes a shloka. He says, you know, that same absolute truth in the Maya impersonalists are worshipping as Brahman. That absolute truth is running around in the forest of Vrindavan, searching for the gopis. Who will believe that this is the activity of the absolute truth? I mean, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is very pleased by that. So actually, that is not because Krishna is incomplete. You know, Krishna, when he performs his leela, he is already complete. But he reciprocates the devotees to share his completeness, to relish his completeness. It is not to, because he is incomplete. Jiva Goswami gives the example, Priti Sandarbha. Most of you know that example. Do you remember the example of the flute? I'll repeat that. So he gives the example that when a person, in our body, the life air goes up and down, what happens is, it maintains our existence. But when that same life air, when the same air comes out of our mouth and a person with that air blows the whistle, and when he blows the whistle,
And this will give the pleasant feeling. Isn't it? A life air moving up and down only maintains our interest. It does not give any pleasure. But that same person can take a piece of wood and make it into a flute. And then that same air, which was earlier used to just blow a whistle, a mouth, or an ordinary whistle just with the mouth, then it is put into a flute. And when it comes out of the flute, so many beautiful sounds come out of it. And he says that when these beautiful sounds come out of it, the person enjoys all the mood. So, what does he use the example for? He says, the life air moving up and down inside the body is the Brahman. He says that, the biologists talk about Ananda, yes, they are at the Brahman platform, that is that their Brahmananda, just their Ananda just maintains their existence in the eternal life. But when the Lord contemplates on his own beauty, that is like taking the air out and hearing with the ears and taking the sound inside of him. When the Lord contemplates on his beauty, so when the order you are talking, Aham Brahmasmi, Aham Brahmasmi, Aham Brahmasmi, get a Brahmananda. But that is just like that, like air moving up and down in the body. But when the Supreme Lord, he lets the air come out and then takes it inside. That is like he contemplates on his beauty. In the childhood, we have probably seen that little Krishna. Krishna sees his own reflection in the wall. And he's so attracted. Mathura also Krishna sees his own reflection in Dwarka in the wall. So who is this extremely attractive person? That is Krishna, where contemplating his own beauty gets more pleasure. But he says, the devotees of Krishna are like the flute. They are all, in one sense, parts of Krishna. And what happens? Krishna's beauty is from his form going into their eyes and their heart. And from their heart, it is coming back into his heart. And then Krishna relishes all the more. So Krishna is attracted by the love of his devotees. But what is the cause of the love of his devotees? The cause of the love of his devotees is his own beauty, his own sweetness. So we say Krishna is dependent on his devotees. Krishna is controlled by his devotees. But what is it about his devotees that controls Krishna? It is a devotion. And how do the devotees get into the devotion? Because Krishna reveals his beauty to them. So, when Krishna relishes the bhakti of his bhaktas, he is not depending on anything outside of himself. He is not depending on anything outside of himself. Because the devotees are his own part and parcels. And they are relishing his bhakti, and they are relishing his beauty. And that relishing of his beauty is creating bhakti in their hearts. And Krishna is relating the creation of the bhakti. So, people are attracted to a wealthy person. Why are they attracted? Because of his wealth. So Krishna is attracted to his bhaktas. Why? Because of their bhakti. But who has given them their bhakti? It is he only. As a Markandeya Rishi, in his prayers to the Lord in the last standard describes, my dear Lord, how merciful are you? That it is you who enliven your devotee's senses with ecstasy. By your beauty, and when you see the devotees overwhelmed with ecstasy, you feel so grateful for their love that you feel you cannot repay their love. He says, who can be as merciful as you?
Sir,
it is you only who enliven your devotee senses with your beauty, and then when the devotees become ecstatic, how much my devotees love. So, in this, Krishna wants to know what is the glory of Radharani's love. Is that Krishna is incomplete? No. Radharani is relishing Krishna's beauty and she is experiencing great love. So from Atva point of view, Bhagavad Gita is mostly a book on Tattva. It's not a book on Rasa. Rasa is talked about occasionally, but it's primarily a book on Tattva. So from the point of view of Tattva, Krishna does not desire anything outside of himself. So when Krishna is relishing love with his devotees, he is relishing his own beauty reflected through the hearts of his devotees as their bhakti. So in that sense, Krishna is not desiring anything else. And when Krishna acts in his material world also, we say that earlier he comes for paritranaya sadhana vinashaya yustita. So these are his purposes. Then is that the karma fall that he wants? No, that is not karma fall, because that is not motivated by his desire for anything selfish. He wants to establish dharma for the good of the living entities. So basically the Bhagavad Gita talks about what causes bondage is selfish desire. And Krishna has no selfish desires. Because when he releases the bhakti of his devotees, it is his own beauty reflected from the hearts of his devotees. So now, after talking about how he has created Varnashram, Krishna concludes this section.
Evam jatva kritam karma purvairapi mumukshubhi kuru karmaiva tasmatvam purvai purvataram kritam.
So, purvai rapi mumukshubhi, in the past. Now, Krishna started this chapter by proktavanaham avayam. So, in the past, I spoke this knowledge. And from the past, many people have been following this knowledge. So, all these people who followed this knowledge, they attained liberation. This purvai rapi mumukshubhi can refer to those who followed the Imam Vasvati Yogam, like verse 1. It can also refer to the past, last chapter. Janakadaya, Lokasangraham eva, Karmanayva is something, Asita Janakadaya. That's 20th verse of the last chapter. So both is correct. Because even Janaka also got the knowledge, he is also a Rajarshi. So in that sense, Krishna is saying in the past many people have followed this. So earlier also, Bhavo Jnana Tapasa. Bhavo is many people in the past. So Krishna is telling that Arjuna is not alone in doing this. Many people in the past have become purified. Many people have become liberated. So you please follow in their footsteps. And you also become liberated. Now, in one sense, this section is a sort of interjection. It is a sort of not the focus of Krishna. Because Krishna is not talking here about bhakti primarily. Krishna is talking in this first section about Nishkam Karma Yoga. And third chapter is talking about Nishkam Karma Yoga. But in order that his teaching of Nishkam Karma Yoga be taken seriously. Because Arjuna's idea is what? That there are only two options. What are the two options? Either you do karma and you get bound, or you practice jnana and give activity. And then you can attain liberation. Krishna is talking about something new for Arjuna. So, in order to establish the authority of his teachings, Krishna quotes about his own position and his own repeated appearances. But here the focus is not on bhakti. And that's why Krishna will not talk about maam much more now. The really focus on maam will start from 7th chapter. Although there occasionally verses will come where Krishna will talk about himself. But the focus, this is the only section in the first 6 chapters of the Gita where Krishna talks quite a bit about himself in the Bhagavad Gita. So verses 1 to 15. Now Krishna comes back to the topic of Nishkam Karma Yoga. So how is it going? Third chapter Krishna is talking about Nishkam Karma Yoga. Till 35, he was telling how the Nishkam Karma Yogi is different from the Karma Kandi. Why? Because he has knowledge and he is not attached. And Arjuna asked about lust. Krishna gave the answer about lust. And then after that, Krishna said, don't think I am telling this to you. This is, knowledge isn't coming down for a long time. And then Krishna said, how come you have taught the verse 1? Then he talks about his own position. And then he is establishing his position and how this teaching is followed by many other people. Now Krishna comes back to this teaching. So in one sense, from verses 36 of the last chapter to verses 15 of this chapter is more of a question answer thing going on. And the teaching, if you see, as we see from here onwards, it's very similar from 4.16. In 4.16, what it was before 3.36. So Krishna, in one sense, whether Krishna says, oh Arjuna, here now, you should understand. Now this is like it is a flow marker. You know, some significant flow is changing, some succession is changing. Krishna will know that it. So now Krishna will explain Arjuna. But actually what I am going to teach you is quite rare. Translation? So this is the third section. What is the third section? Yeah. Karma Yoga is Dharma. So what does Krishna come to teach? What is the Dharma that he teaches? Karma Yoga. Now as you know, Karma Yoga and Bhakti Yoga are very close to each other. So Prabhupada will explain Bhakti Yoga was in there, all the purports. But technically speaking, here Karma Yoga is going on. But also Karma Yoga and Bhakti Yoga are very close to each other. Let's go ahead. Thank you.
कर्म प्रवक्ष्यामि अत्र कवयोक्त अत्र मोहित तत्ते कर्म प्रवक्ष्यामि प्रवक्ष्यामि आई एक्सप्लेन दिस टू यू नाउ नाउ अर्लियर कृष्णा हैज सेड दैट न कर्मणाम अनारंभ निष्कर्मम पुरुषोत्तमे जस्ट बाय नॉट स्टार्टिंग वर्क यू डोंट अगेन निष्कर्म एंड व्हाट इज दिस अकर्म इवन वाइज पीपल डोंट अंडरस्टैंड इट्स क्वाइट रेयर सो यद् ज्ञात्वा एंड ही प्रॉमिसेस इफ यू अंडरस्टैंड दिस व्हाट विल हैपन यू विल गेट द सेम रिजल्ट व्हाट वाज टोल्ड अर्लियर मोक्षस्य शुभात् You become free from misery. This particular phrase comes again later, more specifically in 9.2. Raja Vidya Raja Guriyam. No, the verse before that. 9.1. Idam Dute Guhye Samam. Pravakshyam Yana Suryave. Jnana Vijnana Sahitam. Yajnatva Mokshase Shubhavat. So there Krishna talks about Bhakti Yoga. Specifically. So, let us see. Many times Krishna actually when he's going to do something very significant, he builds us. Now again, the next verse is also building of suspense. Understand these three terms. He doesn't tell you what the terms are. Understand these terms. Yes.
The intricacies of action are very hard
to understand. Therefore, we should know properly what action is, what corporate action is, and what is action. Yes. So, karma over the years, governor. It's very common, very difficult. And then he introduces three terms. Understand karma, understand vikarma, understand akarma. Now, in one sense, these terms are known to Arjuna. But Krishna, because he is talking about detached action, he is going to talk something special. And now Krishna again introduces the Upanishadic verse. So, let's recite this verse. And then let's try to read the Karmanya karmaya pashye akarmaicha karmaya sa buddhiman manushyeshu sa yuktaha krishna karma kret. So one who sees action in inaction, inaction in action, it's difficult to speak also. So he is intelligent among men. And then Krishna has added for he can engage in all activities, but he will not be bewildered. So now when he says karmanya akarmaya pashyet, so what does this mean? One who sees action in inaction. So this, you have to understand this, you have to go back to the previous chapter, 3.6. Karmendriyani sanyamya yasate manasasmara. Isn't it? So, that person is in action. But actually, there is action. So here, in action means that there, when there is external inactivity, but still there is fruitive, there is karmic bondage, there is karmic bondage that is happening. So there is external inactivity. Karmanya akarmaya pashye. So here akarma refers to what? External inactivity. But karma means karmic bondage. So one who sees that even in external inactivity there is karmic bondage. So for Arjuna he is saying, you are thinking that you don't want to be bound in karma, but even if you stay inactive, you are going to be bound in karma. So karmanya akarmaya pashye means, one who sees karmic bondage even in external inactivity. So, the word karma, we often use it very frequently. This is action in inaction. Arjuna is in action, he doesn't fight. But, he sits like a yogi meditating. But, there is still karmic bondage. There is karmic, that's why in external inactivity, there is karmic bondage. That is, action in inaction. So, you know, in law, there is a crime called crime by negligence. Crime by negligence means, if a patient is sick and is on the verge of death, and he can be saved by a doctor administering a medicine, and the doctor does not administer it, then the doctor, by doing nothing, is committing a crime. Isn't it? You know? So, that's our way of understanding action in inaction. In a person is robbing a thief, and a policeman is standing there, policeman doesn't do anything. That is action in inaction. his karma is bound by the law of karma. He is culpable because where there is expectation of duty, he is not doing the duty. Yeah, maunam sammati lakshanam, isn't it? That's what. So Vishwapitama was considered guilty by Lord Krishna because he stayed silent and Draupadi was destroyed. So yes, so Krishna is talking first about this action in action. Second is inaction in action. That means no karmic bondage despite external activity. So no karmic bondage despite external activity. Why? Because the external activity is there, but it is not motivated by any selfish desire. Remember again, it is selfishness or attachment which causes bondage, which is the glue between the karma and the, between the karta and the phala, which causes bondage. So, akarmani cha karmiha. Such a person, sa buddhiman visheshu. So, when we understand such a person is he is buddhiman, then we understand we are not at all buddhiman.
We don't understand anything of what is happening over here.
So you Krishna karma, great. Krishna karma means every Krishna is everything, all kinds of works he may do, but he is not bound. Now, when Krishna is using the word akarma, okay, before I forget, I started this topic. The word karma we use very often, but there are many meanings to the word karma. And often, the word karma when we use, there are three meanings which are often used interchangeably. But because of the context, we understand it. Karma at one level refers to the activity that we do. Second is karma refers to the reaction that we get. You know, I'm sick because of my karma. And here, what we are talking about? The reaction. The karma fall. And third is, we often refer to the system of action-reaction. The law of karma also is karma. Then we use it. You know, those people don't understand the principle of karma. When we talk about principle of karma here, karma they are not referring to particular action or reaction. We are talking about the system. So we use this word of karma for many different meanings. So similarly, the word akarma has a technical meaning. The technical meaning is what? The technical meaning is that when there is non-fruitive action or there is no reaction to action, that is akarma. But in Arjuna's context, Arjuna is thinking of akarma as inaction. So Krishna takes Arjuna's meaning first and shows how that meaning is faulty. So that's why when he is using karmanya akarmaya pashye and akarmani cha karmaya. So what does he mean? He's meaning that actually there is external inaction, but there is when here he's using the word akarma, it is referring to inaction. It is not referring to non-fruitive action. Karmanya akarma yapashe. And akarmani chakarmaya. If you are not understood in this, don't bother about it. We are not having to do classes elaborately on this. But if you have any further doubts, we can discuss it in English. But if you contemplate it, it's not so difficult to understand. It's just that Krishna likes to titillate the intellects of those who are Upanishadic followers. So practically, every chapter he will drop one or two verses like this. You know, which will give people something to scratch their head. Jnani is like this. And that's why, you know, because Krishna has dropped verses like this, that's why in the prasthanatra, the Maya impersonalists also accept Bhagavad Gita as important. So because the Puranas, they can't do much. Krishna came and killed this demon and he did this. You know, what interpretation can do? What sacrifice can you do for them? There's not much to do for them. So the main reason why they love Vedanta Sutra is, Vedanta Sutra is, it's like the words are so universal as to have very little meaning. So you have to put all the meaning by your sacrifice. So, of course, you cannot go on to unlimited length in giving that meaning. And so there is some frame which we have to stick to. But they like it when they can do interpretation like that. Now, but in the next verse, Krishna starts making things very clear. So, 19 to 24, Krishna is talking about, this section is about how a karma yogi works. the karma yogi, how does he act? So, translation? Karmanya akarma yapashe akarmani chakarmaya. So when you are fighting Arjuna, at that time you will not be bound by karma. Why? So in the first line Krishna is using the word karmanya akarma yapashe akarmani chakarmaya. So in the first line he is using it that akarma is the normal akarma that wins. There is no future reaction, there is no karmic bondage. The second line he uses akarmani chakarmaya. And there is inactivity, still there is karmic bondage. In the first line, second line, the word karma don't mean the same thing. Yes. The fire of perfect knowledge. Later on, Krishna will talk about jhana really once again. But what is it that burns? The karma bija, that is the jhana. What does the jhana do? Jhana removes the selfish motivation. Kama sankalpa varjitaha. That means when one is working not for his selfish desires but for a higher cause. The higher cause is not mentioned over here. So we have a 5 minute break and we'll continue after that. Yeah. His question is that earlier Anandi said that no other process can remove the karma beach. So what is this jnana? This jnana, if you see, ultimately is about Krishna. Krishna is giving that jnana. And once in the fourth chapter, by this jnana you will become liberated, he said. But what that jnana is not talked about clearly. And if you look forward, the jnana which Krishna is talking about is, if Krishna is saying, by this jnana tapasa you will come back to me, that cannot be the jnana of impersonal Brahman. That is the jnana of Bhakti. So in one sense, Krishna is heightening the suspense. He is saying, this is the glory of this jnana. But what that jnana is, he will actually give a hint of that in 4.35. That mind will come once again. So we will have 5 minutes break, then we will continue. Hare Krishna. The qualities that Krishna is talking about here seem to be all devotees' qualities. Yes, actually all these qualities for Nishkam Karma Yoga to develop are very difficult. But because Krishna is not specifically talking about Bhakti, so we don't specifically in the flow of the Bhagavad Gita talk about this as talking about Bhakti. But in general the Bhakta develops this quality. Bhakta aspires for this quality and mature Bhakta does have these qualities. But in this particular context, these are the qualities of Nishkam Karma Yoga. Because in all these qualities he is not talking about devotion to him. If you look at this section, the devotion to him is not being talked about. And as we discussed earlier, there is a flow building built up in the Gita by which ultimately Krishna will reveal Bhakti as the Supreme. And when he reveals Bhakti as the Supreme, it's like if you are seeing things at this level, you can see all around you. But when you go one floor up, you can see what is below and you can see at that level also. At Karma Yoga we see certain set of qualities. When we rise upwards, Bhakti Yoga, we see all those qualities and we see something higher also. In that sense, Bhakti Yoga includes the qualities of Karma Yoga. But these are important qualities and devotion also develops these qualities, no doubt. So I have written this down in case there was some confusion. Karmanya akarma iha pashyet. So in this line, akarma means no karmic reaction. So see in external activity no karmic reaction. An example for this is external activity that Arjuna is fighting, but it leads him to no karmic reaction. And akarmani cha karmaya. So here akarma means no external activity. See in external activity karmic reaction. So Arjuna silent meditating leads to karmic reaction. Correct. Here, when Krishna is talking about
Krishna says that actually, if one acts without any selfish motivation, then also one will not get karmic bondage. When we act for Krishna's pleasure, not being karmically bound is only one part of the reaction. We get spiritually liberated. So that is a far greater result. As by being selfless in our activities, we can avoid bondage. But just selflessness without offering it to God does not bring liberation. Does not bring elevation back to the spiritual world. So in that sense, here one part is being told. The second part is not yet told. And in fact, without bhakti, to come to this level of selflessness is also very difficult. Because what do you think about it? In the fifth chapter, we will see how Krishna says, how you should be analyzing when you are eating. You should be thinking that actually, just the tongue is connecting, come in contact with its sense object, food. I have nothing to do with it. You know, when you are sitting, when you are walking, you should think that actually, what is happening is, just the senses are coming along with the sense objects. Then the fresh wind is blowing. Think actually, just the vayu is coming in terms of chakra. I am not involved with that. It's quite a difficult level of consciousness to develop. For a devotee, it becomes much easier because devotee offers empathy to Krishna. So, is it clear now, this particular verse? So, let's go to 4.20. We are a little behind schedule because 2-3 verses we explained quite a bit. So,
nirashirayat cittatma tyakta sarva parigraha shariram kevalam karma kurvannapnoti kilbisham.
Yes, translation.
19th
recited. Sorry, 20th. Do you read the translation?
All attachment to the results of these activities, ever satisfied and independent, we perform no previous self, although engaged in all kinds of undertakings.
Yes. Now, interestingly, nirashraya. Now, the bhakta quality is Krishna ashraya. Why is it of nirashraya? So, here is talking about no ashraya of any living entity. Remember in the third chapter also we discussed 3.18. So it does not take shelter of any living entity. That refers to devatas or the pitras. It doesn't take shelter of anyone. Nirashraya. Why? Because he is self-satisfied. So basically what Krishna is talking about, if this is karma kand, then one comes to karma yoga, then one comes to jnana yoga. So Krishna is talking about to Arjuna that with the consciousness of a jnana yogi you practice karma. So this is describing the actual. That's why this verse is called, the chapter is called as transcendental knowledge. Why? Because with the consciousness of a jnani you practice karma yoga. Although one can practice jnana yoga, but for the sake of loka sangraha, for the sake of setting examples for others, practice karma yoga. So it's a jnani is to self-satisfied. Nirashraya, he doesn't need any external help from anyone. So, say a person, if this consciousness is evolved, he will be not bound. Naiva kinchit karoti saha. So, he says, as if, although he is doing karma, it is as if he is not doing even the slightest of karma. He will not be bound at all. Yes. Translation,
21. Perfectly
controlled, gives up all constructive tips over his position and asks
only for
where
this is applied.
Thus,
working is not
affected by sinful reactions. Hmm. So, shariram kevalam karma works only for the basic maintenance of his body. And Prabhupada talks in this purport, I think, about the animal. The animal may be killed by the master, the animal may fed very sparsely, but the animal accepts that and continues it, the domestic animal. So we will not go into analysis of these verses because that will take a long time. That means you know, the practical application of how to be nirashi and tyakta sarva parigraha. That would take a different class. But we will discuss some salient features of what Krishna is talking about. You see, most of the time
Krishna is talking here in terms of negations. You know, no material offsetness, no material attachment, no material. So basically Krishna is talking about being in the material world without being connected with the material world. That's all. We say be in the world, but don't be of this world. But so Krishna is talking about don't be of this world and be in this world. But how to do it? By that love for Krishna, that Krishna will talk later. Go ahead. Translation.
Who is satisfied with gain, which comes of his own accord, who is free from duality and does not envy, who is steady in both success and failure, is never entangled with all those performing actions.
The same point. Kritvapi na nibadhyate. Then?
The work of man, who is unattached to the modes of material nature and who is fully situated in transcendental knowledge, merges entirely into transcendental.
Yes. So, praviyate, this is a word for which devotees have phobia. And for which in person has special attraction. Praviyate. But, what is it that is merging? Karma samagram praviyate. Do not karta samagram praviyate. It is the work will merge into transcendental. That means the work will become transcendental. The work will become transcendental. And Krishna introduces the concept which he talked about in the third chapter of yajna. Once again, yajnaya acharataha karma. So what is yajna? Yajnatha karma nunyantra. Work as a sacrifice. And now, Krishna will talk about. After he talks about this, is karma yoga, but karma yoga with jnana. And then, after describing in one verse, what is the highest level of the jnana of such a karma yogi, then he will go into the processes for acquiring this jnana. Yes, so this is another verse which is very Upanishadic.
Brahmarpanam brahmahave, brahmagnav brahmanahutam. Brahma eva te na gantavyam, brahma karma adhina.
Translation.
A person who is fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness is sure to attain the spiritual kingdom because of his full contribution to spiritual activities in which the communication is the absolute and the which is offered is of the same spiritual nature.
Yes. So, now Krishna is taking this principle of yajna and he is generalizing it. The third chapter also he to some extent broadened it. The yajna means to act for satisfaction of Krishna. You remember in the morning we talked about a specific cultural expression and a universal spiritual principle. So now, generally people understand yajna also in a specific cultural expression. You do a fire sacrifice. But now Krishna will give a very general expression or general spiritual principle of yajna. What is it? That we understand that Brahman is offered into Brahman. That means, Brahmarpanam Brahmahavir. So, we'll take the literal meaning and then we'll take the contextual meaning for Arjuna. Vichakravarti Pada. The literal meaning is what? If a yajna is being performed, then the fire, that is spiritual, that is Brahman. The ahuti that is offered, that is spiritual. Yajna shishta, the remnants that are being left after, that is spiritual. The brahmana who is doing the yajna, he is spiritual. The yajman who is getting the yajna performed, he is spiritual. The phala that they will get is spiritual. Ultimately, by this, if they do it purely, they will return to the spiritual world. So in that sense, Krishna is talking about yajna, but not a karma kandi. He is talking about the ultimate highest level of yajna, where everything is spiritualized. But primary thing is what? The spiritualization of the consciousness. When the consciousness is spiritualized, a spiritualized consciousness will spiritualize everything else. Now, so Chakravarti Pada explains that Krishna, that I want you to perform a yajna or Arjuna. But Brahmana is performing yajna. Arjuna says, no, but this is a special yajna. I want you to perform this yajna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Oh, really? What sort of yajna is this? He says, you are the Brahmana in the yajna, and your sacrificial spoon is your kandiva. It's your kandiva. Cha. And the ghee that is to be offered is the Kauravas. And the fire into me, then he is going to be offered the arrows that come out of their tongue. So, I never heard of such a yajna. Oh, you have not heard? But there are many different kinds of yajnas. I will tell you about them.
And then, Krishna starts telling about different types of yajnas. Before taking food, acha. So Brahma Arpanam Brahma Havi. They have a story of Sarval,
Sarvam Kalma Vidambe.
Everything is Brahma.
So yes,
Prabhupada talks about, this is a CC, very beautiful performances.
Yes, everything is Brahma, it is correct. So the tiger is also Brahma and the cow is also Brahma. But by going close to the tiger Brahma and going close to the cow Brahma, two different results are going to come.
So, yes, everything is Brahma, but when we are part of the Brahma and Brahma is realized,
you know, we have to act in a way. It is, Prabhupada says further also, he says, well, where is this? I think Ramadhan is only that purport Prabhupada says, that, yes, the taste of alcohol is also a level of realization of Brahman. But that level of realization will not elevate, it will degrade. On the other hand, if one realizes Krishna's beauty, that is also realization of Brahman. But it is the highest realization of Brahman. And that will liberate. So yes, ultimately we can say that everything is spiritual. That we can say that ultimately. But the point is, does it lead to a spiritual result? Does it lead us to a spiritual result? Phalena parichayate. So, alcohol is it spiritual? We can say, yes, whatever taste a person maddens a person with alcohol, that taste, alcohol is a dead substance. How does it get that taste? That is Krishna manifesting through that. His all, a fraction of his all attraction is through that. But that attraction to that fractional manifestation of Krishna is not going to elevate, it is going to degrade. It's a Brahma Karma Samadhi. So, Krishna says, now I will tell you about different kinds of yajnas. So then he starts telling. Let's see the translation. So basically now what Krishna is going to talk about is, he is going to give a brief overview of all the different processes that are there in the Vedic literature and the Vedic culture. All the processes which are there for gradual spiritual advancement. Yes. No. So what's the purpose? Before this, what's the purpose? So, Krishna is talking about two categories, demigod worshipper and impersonalists. They are also performing yajna. They are also doing some sacrifice. They are off, and they are doing some worship. That is also yajna. Go ahead.
From the unedited Brahmachari, sacrifice the hearing causes and the senses in the fire of mental control. And other related houses sacrifice objects of the senses in the fire of the senses.
Yes. This is a very dramatic way of putting it. It means what do the brahmacharis do? They take the senses and offer them in the mind. That means instead of using the senses to come in contact with sense objects, we turn them inwards and the fire of the controlled mind. The senses become the ahuti. That means, what is the principle over here? Just like I was telling, what is the principle of yajna? That which could be used for our pleasure, we offer it for the Lord's pleasure. The senses, we can use it for our own pleasure. We can hear many sweet melodious sounds, we can see beautiful sights. But instead, we turn those inwards. We use them only for Krishna's service, otherwise we withdraw them inside. So in this sense, the senses which could be used for our pleasure, we sacrifice them in the fire of the controlled mind. Similarly, grihasthas, they can try to get all sense verification, but then there is control in contact with senses and sense objects. And then it becomes also a yajna. Then go ahead. No, shabdadi vishanye indriya avishyuvati. The sense objects in the fire of the senses. It's three levels. There's the consciousness, there's the mind, and the senses and sense objects. So the brahmacharis, they offer the senses in the mind. That means they avoid the contact of senses with the sense objects. the senses in the fire of the mind, and the grahastha, the sense objects in the fire of the senses. That means, sense objects and senses, the contact is limited regulatively. Okay, go ahead. So now, here in one more verse, Krishna will talk about Ashtanga Yoga, and we'll discuss that in the sixth chapter. Let's move forward.
Having accepted strict vows, some which are enlightened by sacrificing their possessions, and others by performing severe austerity, by practicing the yoga of eightfold mysticism, or by studying the Vedas to advance in
transcendental knowledge. Yes. So Dravya Yajna is Prabhupada explains to start Anna Shalas, to start to have free food distribution. All this will lead to sacrifice. Similarly, to do some tapasya, like Chaturmasya, that they also have sacrifices. And in English also, the word sacrifice comes from sakra, and sakra also is coming from the original Latin word, which also leads to the word sacred. So sacrifice means to make sacred. And yajna, what do we do by that? We also make things sacred. So we have dravya, but when we offer in a sacrifice, then the dravya becomes sacred. We have body, when we do austerity with it, the body becomes sacred, like that. Now again, the next verse, Krishna will talk about pranayama, yoga, so to decide that routine.
These others who are inclined to the process of breath restraint to remain in trance, practice by offering the movement of the outgoing breath into the incoming, and the incoming breath into the outgoing, and thus at last remain in trance, stopping all breathing. Others certainly speaking, the outgoing breath itself is
active. This is quite abstract. Quite fanciful. What is the outgoing breath? How do you offer it in the incoming? How you offer the ingoing into the ingoing?
What does it mean?
So pranayama is a very vast science. And you know what we do is just crack at its surface when we do our anulom vilom and all those things.
So
for 5 verses from 25 to 29, Krishna has talked about different kinds of yajnas. Now, from 30 to 33, the next 4 verses, he will talk about the general principles behind these yajnas. And this is what is important for us. Translation?
All these performers who know the meaning of practice become cleansed of sinful reactions. And having tasted the nectar of the results of sacrifices, they advance towards the supreme eternal atmosphere.
So, Krishna is what Brahma Karma Samadhina he told earlier. And this is Brahma Sanatana Yanti. They will go to the Brahma Sanatana. But what is their qualification? First of all, Yajna Vido. They know what is Yajna, what is its purpose. And then, by the Yajna, Shapita Kalmashaha, they become purified. And thirdly, they take accept the remnants of Yajna. Yajna Shishta Amruta Bhujo. So still, Krishna now in the next verse will tell. So it's a contrast in these verses 30 and 31. He says, by doing yajna, yanti brahma sanatana. But by not doing yajna, what will happen? This is one of the verses, the 29th verse, has 3 lines in it, or from the English point of view, 6 lines. So here, there is only 1 line. Nāyam lokosya yajnasya kuto anyah kusattama. Very simple. Nāyam lokasya. In this world, ayajnasya, without yajna you cannot live, you cannot be happy. Kuto anyah, what to speak of the next world? Translation?
Who
based on
the good ideas,
love sacrifice, one can never be happy on this planet or in this life. What then for the next? Yes. So, we see without sacrifice, even this world becomes chaotic as we are now heading towards ecological crisis and so many other crises. So, now Krishna will further give an other general principle. So, what are the general principles we talked about? Vaiyajna is in this life you get the Yajna Shishta Amrita, and at the end of this life you go back to the Brahma Sanatana. But if without that, neither this nor next life one can be happy. Then he talks a little bit more about those yajnas. Go ahead.
All these different kinds of sacrifices are included by Veda, and all of them are born of different types of work. Knowing them as such, you will become liberated.
So, here Krishna is unifying all these diverse activities by telling us their ultimate purpose. Many people, especially Western Indologists, because the Christian Indologists study very literature, they say that these Vedic literature are just a motley group of literature. Motley means randomly mixed together. I know this scripture talks about this Devta worship, this scripture talks about this Yogasana, this scripture talks about Brahman, this scripture talks about something else. And they're all considered in one group as Vedic scriptures, but they're all entirely different and contradictory and inconclusive. But what is Krishna telling over here? It's a very important verse, although we don't quote it very often. Bahuvidha yajna. Yes, there are many yajnas. But vitata brahmano. Okay. Here they're all coming from the Vedas. And what is the why are they so different in this way? Karmajan vidhitan sarvan. According to the level of the people, these different yajnas are open. That means the Vedic scriptures offer us what is called as user-friendly spirituality. Now, user-friendly spirituality means what? That according to the level of the user, according to the level of sadhaka, there is facility given. So, I'll discuss this a little bit later in more detail, but briefly now, since we have come to this topic. In spiritual life, there are two things. There is sadhya and sadhana for the sadhaka. The sadhaka is only the seeker. And his sadhya is the goal. And sadhan is the means to that goal. The seeker wants to know what he is seeking, a goal, and he is seeking a means to that goal. Sadhaka, sadhya and sadhana. So now, in the non-Vedic Western religions, Semitic religions, there is told there is only one sadhya and there is only one sadhana. For example, there is only one God. Namaskar, Allah, there is only one God, and even in the Bible it is said, your God is a jealous God and should not worship any other God before Him. So the sadhya is only one. And sadhana is also only one. And the worship that God in this particular way, and that's all. So, in that sense, the flexibility in these religions is very much the same. This is the only goal and this is the only way. Now the Vedic scriptures also say there is one ultimate God and there is one ultimate way. The ultimate God is Krishna, the ultimate way is bhakti. But the Vedic scriptures understand that karmajan vidhitam sarvan. Different people are at different levels. And if we make spirituality like 1-0, then you accept this God in this way, or otherwise you are doomed to go for it. Then many people will be left outside the doorway of religion. That's why if you remember when Prabhupada was asked, among a demigod worshipper and a Christian, who is better? What did Prabhupada reply? Demigod worship. Why? Because he's in the house of the Vedas. He's in the house of the Vedas. So house of the Vedas means, in the house of the Vedas, actually there is a deep inside, the big house, and there is a treasury chamber. In that treasury chamber, Krishna is there. But there are many other things in the house of the Vedas. But still they are inside the house. So, in the Vedic literature, there is flexibility of both sadhya and sadhana. That means if you don't want to worship Krishna, yeah, there are so many devatas you can worship. Not one, not two, there are 33 million devatas. You can worship any of them. And by that, you can get elevated. And if you don't want to worship, you can do tapasya. You can cultivate jnana. You can do yogasanas. You can fast. So sadhana is also free. So, there is variety in sadhana, there is variety in sadhya. But this does not mean that all this is chaotic, confusing and contradictory or inconclusive. No, there is a procreation over there. And Krishna is telling that these are all coming from one source. And then you understand that there is variety because of different people's different karma. Then, evam jatva vimokshate. When you understand their unifying purpose, their one source and their one ultimate purpose, then you will become liberated. And now Krishna, among this whole confusing array of different yajnas, it is best if one performs yajna with knowledge. rather than performing yajna just as a ritual without marriage. And then he will tell, yes, there are all these yajnas, but all these yajnas are meant to get knowledge. The best to perform the yajnas is knowledge. And then he will tell, how you should get knowledge. And that is the verse which we quote most often in this chapter. Yes, so just in translation of 33. Sarva karma akhilam partha jnane parisamaptite. So, this chapter glorifies jnana a lot. Now, why is it glorifying jnana? Because from karma yoga, the goal is jnana yoga. In the progressive march forwards, so Krishna talked about karma yoga in the past chapter. The second chapter, as well as the third chapter, as well as the fourth chapter, he talked about it. And the purpose of karma yoga is to develop jnana and come to the level of jnana yoga. So just like Krishna glorified karma yoga a lot as compared to karma kanda. So when Krishna is going to talk about jnana, he will glorify jnana a lot as compared to karma yoga. But now if we look at the glorification of karma yoga as compared to karma kanda, neha vikramana shustri, nistrayum nyobhavarjana, all that glorification attains its fulfillment in bhakti yoga. Similarly, all the glorification of jnana will attain its fulfillment in bhakti yoga. And all this, yes, the jnana which will lead to all these glorious results which we will talk about later. Sarva karma akhilam partha jnane parisamaptite. Yes, by jnana, the purpose of all karma is to get jnana. But what is that jnana? Let us see, that Krishna will describe in the next verse. He will describe what is that jnana. And the verse after that he will describe what is the fruit of that jnana. How does that jnana change our vision? Yeah? So now, we have two options. Either we can go on and we can complete this chapter or we can stop here. Is there a chapter?
Just try to learn the truth by approaching a spiritual master. Inquire from him for misery and render service in him. Self-realized souls can impart knowledge unto you because they have seen the truth.
So, if you remember in the morning I discussed, Chakravarti passes, Vedic script, Vedic statements in the imperative are instructions. So, all the previous descriptions of yajna were informative. Some people do this yajna, some people do this yajna, but what should you do, Arjuna? Go to the spiritual master and learn from him. So, he gives some general principles of yajna, but what should you do? You should go to the spiritual master and learn from him. And we have discussed this verse a lot in our classes, so I won't go into the details of this verse. But what is the effect of this knowledge? So when the spiritual master gives us knowledge, what happens by that? Let's decide this verse.
Yajnatva na punar moham evam yasyati pandava yena bhutana sheshani rakshasyatmanya bhomai.
So, two things, two results you see. First is, never again you will fall in illusion like this, O Arjuna. And second result is more important. What he says? You will see all living beings as Atmani, in me and mine. He is not saying Atma me. You will see all living beings as me. He is not saying that. They are in me and they are mine. So, that mine is very important, you know. As we say that, we are not God, we are gods. Not simply S, but apostrophe S. So, very clear. Atha mai, it's not atha me. We will see all living beings as mine. That means, what is this knowledge which we are getting from the spiritual master? That spiritual master tells us, the knowledge will tell us about the relationship of all living entities with Krishna. And when we understand the relationship of all living entities with Krishna, then we will never fall into delusion. So Arjuna, you will understand that you are, and your well-wisher, and the well-wisher of the Kauravas also, and the well-wisher of Bhishma Pitamaha also. And what I am telling you to do is good not just for me, not just for you, but even for them. And therefore you will never fall into illusion, thinking like, whether I should do this or I should not do this. So this is the, I'll say, this is the verse that Krishna brings in Mayi once again in this chapter. Very clearly. And it's very significant doing this. You will see all living entities as Mayi. So, like you were asking earlier about these qualities of a devotee. Yes, so here Krishna is talking about, he's glorifying the jnana a lot, but what is that jnana? That jnana is bhakti jnana. It is actually, although the word bhakti may not be used here explicitly, but the result, the vision that comes from that is a bhakti vision. It is not a jnani vision. A jnani vision is what? Everything is one. So, the bhakti vision is that actually there is the result of, there is the understanding of this duality, of this difference. So, Rupa Goswami and Jiva Goswami, they give a very nice analysis of Shushta Jnana and Bhakti Unmukha Jnana. So, we'll just do the analysis quickly. So, Bhakti Unmukha Jnana. And Shushka Jnana is? The dry speculative knowledge. So this jnana, what it does is, it helps us to understand the living entities' difference with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So here, Shushka jnana leads to living entity is equal to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's the first and major difference. And that's why the jnana is condemned, because generally that is the result. That the understanding is one. Secondly, this jnana increases one's attraction to Krishna. This jnana, what does it do? It hardens one's heart. Why? Because, you know, the jnani specializes in analysis. But he is a merciless analyst. With the sword of analysis, he cuts off all the layers of illusion in this world. But when he comes to Krishna, he tries to cut Krishna also with analysis. And he tries to go beyond Krishna. That's why even, so what happens is, the jnani thinks, well, I have to go beyond bhakti, I have to go beyond Bhagavan also. So that's why he becomes hard-hearted. So in the process, in the goal, both this jnana creates a problem. In the process what happens? One goes, becomes hard-hearted towards Krishna. Because one thing, bhakti is a sentimental people. We have to go beyond bhakti. And in the end, what happens? One, instead of understanding one's unity, where one's subordination to Krishna, one tries to imagine that one is identical with Krishna. And ultimately, the final fruit, this jnana's ultimate fruit is praying, this jnana's fruit is mukti. So, whenever the scriptures talk about jnana, and whenever the Vaishnava acharyas talk about jnana in a negative way, it is that jnana. Whereas, the jnana is talked about over here. What is this jnana? It is actually this jnana, because Atmanya Thomai, we see all living beings as parts and parcels of Krishna. That is bhakti unmukh jnana, that is not the nirvishesh jnana, the shushka jnana of the Maya voice. And now, once Krishna describes this, now you will understand that all the glorification that Krishna is doing is of this bhakti unmukh jnana, it is not simply jnana. And this glorification will be similarly repeated for bhakti later in the 9th chapter. Nice words, we decide this. Api chedasi papebhya sarvebhya papa krittamaha sarvam jnana plave naiva vrijinam santarishyasi.
Even if you are considered to be the most, then you are situated in the most, and you will not be able to cross over the most.
Yes. So, actually, from the strictly point of view, from the jnani point of view, Actually, the Gyanis said that only it is the Brahmana who can attain liberation. Other Varanas, they have to do practice, eventually they will be born as Brahmanas and then they will attain liberation. Because how do you attain liberation? By taking sannyas. And only Brahmanas are allowed to take sannyas. Kshatriyas can go only to Vanapras, they cannot take sannyas. So what Krishna is telling over here is, everybody can be purified. And he compares this Gyan to a boat. Now the scriptures also compare the lotus feet of the Lord to the boat. Isn't it? The glorification is the same. So what Krishna is doing is, Krishna is basically talking about bhakti, but he is using the jargon, the terminology of the Gyan yogis. Because he wants to attract all of them. And then sarvam gyan apnavin, everybody will be liberated. Vrijanam is the ocean of misery. Santarishyasi. I will go beyond this. And then after that, again the fire. Gyan is the fire which will liberate. Is the translation?
As the blazing fire turns fire out to ashes, O Arjuna, so does the fire of knowledge go out to ashes all reactions to material activity.
Yes. So, this is similar to the Brahma Samhita verse. What is that verse? Karmani nirgahati kintucha bhakti bhajam. So, jnanani sarva karmani. Now, I hope this point is clear. That this is not just jnana, this is bhakti unmukh jnana. So, Krishna has dropped the hint of it. And you will see later, when Krishna will talk about jnana in 13th, in the 14th chapter, there he will emphasize bhakti all the more explicitly. Yes. Yes. Right. Actually, Bhagavad Gita is very beautiful. In fact, any of the concepts of the Bhagavad Gita are talked about in Bhagavad Gita. In fact, Bhagavad Gita will be a very long camp. They will have to complete one chapter per class. Almost like 20 hours. Oh, it's very huge. It's very, very big. But it's very nice. Chakravarti Pad, there is the commentary. Arjuna asks, no, sorry, Uddhava asks Krishna, please tell me about your vibhutis. So Krishna smiles. As the Chakravarti Pad says, Krishna says to Uddhava, no, my devotee Arjuna also asked me this question. But at that time we were a battle field, so I spoke in a hurry. Do you want to speak elaborately now? So that is Uddhava Gita. Yes. Now Krishna tells, again, these three verses are all talking about the potency of this knowledge. So if you see how it is happening, 33rd verse told, you know, knowledge is the, acquiring knowledge is important. 32nd verse says that, all karma ends in knowledge, yajna performed knowledge is important. Then Krishna used the process to acquire that knowledge, then he used the fruit of that knowledge, the vision that will result from that knowledge. And after that, Krishna is talking about the glory, the potency of that knowledge, for three verses. Yeah. Nahi jnanena sadrusham pavitram iha vidyate tat svayam yoga sam siddhah kalena atmani vindati.
This world is nothing. Both sublime and pure comes with knowledge. Because knowledge is the natural fruit of all the accomplished in the practice of devotion service, enjoy this knowledge within himself in due course of time.
Enjoys this knowledge. So what is that? When you are a devotee and just sit and remember Krishna and be happy all the time. So, actually we may say, Aham Brahmasmi, I am Sachidananda. Mind will take, you are not Anandi. Go ahead and enjoy it.
You know,
we can't stay at the level of Aham Brahmasmi for a very long time. But actually when a devotee is remembering Krishna, that remembrance of Krishna, there are so many flavors. I mean, there are so many different pastimes, different rasas in those pastimes, different qualities of Krishna. So, and what happens? Kalen Atmani Vindati. This Kalen Atmani Vindati is similar to this. Yatta Dagri Vishanga Parinamai Amrutopamam. As time will pass, you will realize it more and more. What is also similar to? Syat Krishna Nam Charita Vichitapya Vidya. As we get cured, then the natural relish will come. So bhakti will relish it more and more. As time passes, of course not just time passes, but we also become purified. So, as we become purified more and more, we will relish bhakti more and more. And then, now Krishna will again do a contrast, like he did earlier. who can acquire this knowledge and who cannot.
Shraddhavan labhate jnanam tatpara sanyatendriya jnanam labdhva param shanti shredadhi gacchati.
So, what is the prerequisite for this knowledge? Shraddhava. One has to be faithful. Again, we say faithfulness is more of serious inquisitiveness. And not just serious inquisitiveness, tapparaha. One should be serious about acquiring that knowledge. One should be attached to that. And of course, samyata indriyaha. One should regulate the senses. Why? Because this knowledge is spiritual and sense indulgence binds us to the material world. And then one will get this jnanam. And what will happen? Shanti, one will get the supreme shanti. But, like at the end of the second chapter, Krishna, Arjuna catches this word, shanti, oh, I should not fight this war. So there is one more word which will shanti will come. So, param shanti, achirena, soon you will attain, soon the battle will stop and the tent leaves. Arjuna is thinking in those terms. Now, contrast this with the next verse, where Krishna says, the faithless can get no happiness.
Abhyascha shraddhadhanascha samshayatma vinashyati nayam lokosti na paro sukham samshayatmanah.
So as you know, this is talking about three levels. Ajnana is one who doesn't know anything about spiritual life at all. Ashraddhadhana is one who knows about the Vedic scriptures but doesn't have faith in those Vedic scriptures. Samshayatma is one who knows Vedic scriptures, has some faith, but while practicing is constantly hesitant and doesn't practice his whole heart really. So, all these three categories of people unfortunately cannot get any tangible gain. So, even in the best case, if one decides, I want to follow this path, let me follow it wholeheartedly to see whether it works or not. If one is half-hearted, then one will not get any tangible result because one is not applying oneself wholeheartedly. So this is again a contrast. So we saw our contrast earlier in 3.30.31. We saw another contrast in 4.30.31 about those who do yajna and don't do yajna. Now here, those who have knowledge and those who don't have knowledge. And now, there will be a call for action that is coming soon, which is very surprising to Arjuna. Yes.
One who acts in devotional service, renouncing the fruit of his action, and whose doubts have been destroyed by transcendental knowledge, is situated practically with such. Thus he is not bound by the reactions of work, O conqueror of riches.
There is no word shanti here, but the word is sannyasta karmanam. You should do karma sannyas. Yes, I should do karma sannyas. You should not work. Yoga sannyasta karmanam. Jnana sanchinna samishayam. By your jnana, destroy all doubts. And when you have destroyed your doubts by knowledge, then you have done karma sannyas. But Krishna is talking about karma yoga. Sannyas of karma and practice of yoga. That Arjuna doesn't catch. Atma vantanna karmani. Then you will not be bound. So, these two verses, in one sense, these three verses are leading Arjuna in a particular direction. Because he is thinking that, yes, there are different yajnas, but what am I supposed to do? I am supposed to go to a spiritual master and surrender to him, render service to him, and then I will get a very spiritual vision, then Kali Nathmanivandati, then Param Shanti, and suddenly as all this climax is being built up, suddenly what happens? Krishna is entirely different.
Tasmad ajnana sambhutam ristam jnanasin atmanah chitvainam samshayam yogam atishto tishta bharata.
Therefore, the doubts which have arisen in your heart out of ignorance should be slashed by the weapon of knowledge. Armed with yoga, O Bharata, stand and fight.
Fight! So praying for Arjuna. You are thinking of the sword of knowledge. Yes, sword of knowledge. I have the whole illusion. But no, you see, sword of knowledge you use and sword of yoga. Tasmad jnana asina. And equip yourself with yoga and fight. So I was very surprised, I was shocked, what is happening? So you were going in a particular direction, but suddenly a call for action is in a very different direction. He said, you know, so the whole class, suppose we are talking about how we should be attentive and chanting. And you know, the whole world will go on. Vijay will go on. Krishna will take care. We have to take care of ourselves. Very strong call, attentive chanting. We should not sleep in chanting. We require, we should take sufficient rest at night. And now, let us all go and start our own centers.
You say, what is this? Oh, the build-up was one and the call for action is entirely different. So Arjuna is a little confused. And to some extent, he asks a question which is very similar to the question which is asked in the third chapter. That tomorrow when we discuss about the fifth chapter, we'll discuss some parallels between the fifth and third chapter. But although there are parallels, Krishna is taking the concept deeper and deeper into the fifth chapter, in the fifth chapter he discusses.
What is
Krishna?
Krishna?
Actually, if you see, Krishna is qualifying very clearly. He says, Param Shanti. He is not talking about ordinary Shanti. The Shanti is Param, that is internal peace, supreme peace that comes by living in harmony with our spiritual nature and God. And Krishna is also using the word Yoga Sanyasta Karmanam. So, but what happens is, as I said, when people hear, they have certain things in their mind. And when something gels with what they have in their mind, that's what gets their focus. So, that's what is happening with Arjuna. And of course, you know, Arjuna is a yoga mind, so Krishna is arranging for us to get more and more nectar. Otherwise, the whole Bhagavad Gita could have got over in the second chapter. Yes, Krishna, I'll find now. But then, we would not have got a systematic philosophical knowledge. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki Jai, Srimad Prabhupada ki Jai, Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki Jai, Srimad Prabhupada ki Jai.